Any Elvis fans in the house? No. Oh man. Okay, I see a few. My. I saw some head shaking. No, they're like absolutely not. Now this is like my brother's dream come true. Lynn Oswald is probably asking, why did you shorten the song? Y'all may not know this about her. She's a huge Elvis fan. Let me see those Elvis fans again. Who are they? Okay, here's the other question, right? Are you skinny Elvis fans or fat Elvis fans? Because there is a difference, right? There is a difference. When you look at that song, I felt like after the song I needed to kind of do a hip thing right there just to get in the Elvis mood or whatever. I know, we can't do that. Got to keep, as long as both feet are on the floor, we're fine, right? thank you. Kind of a depressing song though, right? I mean, for Christmas, could be a little happier. I mean, we're supposed to be singing like Joy to the World, and here's Elvis singing, you know, I mean, just I'm blue without you. If you go on and listen to the full song, he talks about blue snowflakes falling and blue memories and blue heartaches start hurting. It's actually hurting, not hurting, so just so you know. But hey, you know, while I'm sitting, the song is essentially this. Hey, while I'm sitting over here in pain, just feeling all the blueness of the holiday, I hope you're okay. You'll be all right with your Christmas of white, but I'll have a blue Christmas, which I thought, guilt trip much? You know, I mean, awesome, Elvis, way to go, you know? Anybody ever feel this way, though? You don't have to raise your hands. I mean, we come to the Christmas and the holiday season, and it's all festive and cheery, and it's reds and greens and happy and elves and Santa and smiles and carolers. Does anybody just want to take some snowballs sometimes and throw them at those carolers? I'm just curious. Does anybody just want to, I see those hands. Anybody ever just want to shut off the lights and close the door and just kind of go, enough of the jolly, I just need to be real for a moment? Does anybody maybe feel a little closer to the blue Christmas sometimes, maybe all the time? And you feel like as you look at the world and you kind of think, man, how am I missing out? I'm not where everybody else is. So we strive for things and we hope for things, and then sometimes we end up with that blue Christmas. But it kind of comes down to some expectations, doesn't it, sometimes? So for example, I thought I'll share some nice, lovely pictures with you about things we expect versus things we get maybe around Christmas. Maybe it's that Christmas tree we bought from Amazon. There's the picture on the left, and then there's what you got on the right. Anybody had that Amazon experience before? Yeah, I see those hands too. What's the next one? Decorating the tree. You know, you have those visions, right, parents? Yeah. Let's just get the kids around and the nice PJs. And how many of them look like that, though? Yes, I see those hands. Or the gingerbread house we try to make. Yeah, that's what mine would look like. The Christmas parade we want to watch, where we have that picture of Santa, and then all we see is the back of children's heads in front of us. Yeah. What about the lights we try to hang? Yeah, that's about how it gets, right? Or the presents we hoped we'd get. The nice one. Anybody ever got the one in the Academy bag there before? I actually knew a guy, he actually told me one time, they just decided not to wrap presents, they used garbage bags for all their children. Or the family photo. You got this one here. We always want the smiling children. It never works out. Or this one here, the one with Santa. Yep. You know, as we think about, it's children, right? It's always, children mess up everything. It's just, it's all those kids, man. Just kidding. For those that love your children. No. You know, sometimes it's the holiday season, and sometimes maybe it's a little more than that. But we get to thinking about what we're supposed to do, how we're supposed to feel, how we're supposed to react. And we feel guilty. We feel a little bit out of sorts. We feel like the outsider because we see everybody else just celebrating and we really feel, you know, blue. Sometimes it's seasonal. Sometimes it's just because it's self-inflicted. I'll admit some of my Christmas anxiety is only because I usually wait until the 23rd or 24th of December to start buying gifts for my wife. Bad move. I know. You think, as old as I am, I would learn by now. But I don't. And then anxiety hits. But you know, sometimes it's beyond that. Maybe it's even January when you've spent all this money and that credit card bill hits. Maybe that's when the anxiety hits. But it can even be deeper and go beyond that, because sometimes it's really not even tied to the holiday. We just have anxiety, maybe even depression, maybe just difficulty dealing with all that's going on in life. And there are many things that can cause us to experience a blue Christmas. There can be grief and hurt and pain or loss or those unmet expectations, anxiety, worry. Whatever it may be, we have to admit that the holidays, which are supposed to be the most wonderful time of the year, can sometimes be a blue Christmas. Now, I realize right now you're going, Brent, I want happy messages at Christmas. Make me feel good. But if there's one thing I hope you know about Ashworth, is that we want to be real. We want to be authentic. We want to be the place where we don't have to put on the mask, where we don't have to act like everything is okay. And see, that's really a problem, I think, that comes with faith a lot of times, is that when we come to faith, as people who follow Jesus, we get this mentality that tells us everything is supposed to be okay. Don't worry, don't have anxiety, don't have a blue Christmas because you follow Jesus. That is supposed to cause rainbows and butterflies and unicorns all over your life. And we find that as Christians sometimes, we fall into that dangerous trap, that trap of faking it. Anybody feel that way sometimes? You don't have to lift the hands. We fall into that trap. We feel like we have to fake it. We think we're supposed to have this rosy life. We think we're supposed to be experiencing that Hallmark movie, for those that enjoy Hallmark movies. And, you know, is that really how it is? We need to acknowledge something about our church culture, but also our culture at large here in the States. We don't do suffering well. We don't do pain or grief or hardship well. And I think that's especially true for people following Jesus. I mean, think about it. What usually happens when somebody shares something difficult with us? What do? We get uncomfortable, right? We get to a place where it's like, okay, I need to say the right thing. I need to fix it because I can't stand being here. I got to get out of here because I'm not equipped to do this. Even this past week, I'm a fix-it guy, just so you know. I don't deal well with problems I can't solve. I need to be able to fix it. And so if you come to me and you're struggling, I would say, let's find a solution. Let's find the source. We've got to fix it. And if we can't fix it, if I can't fix it right away, you know what I'm tempted to do? Throw some good old Christian platitudes your way. Anybody like to use those? Got a little list of them in your back pocket just ready to use at those moments when you need to get out of that uncomfortable situation? Well, you know, God works all things together for our good. Now, that was actually in the Bible. We may be using it wrong, but it's there. You know, oh, don't worry. God is in control. Still a true statement. Not very helpful sometimes when you're in the midst of it. Or, you know, my favorite one that is not in the Bible. Well, you know, Amy, God will never give you more than you can handle. We throw these things out. As I've said, even this past week, I was visiting with a friend, and this friend was sharing with me some really painful details about some things going on in her life with a child of hers who's going through some real mental health issues, some real struggles. And I'll be honest, as she's talking to me and I'm watching her and tears running down her face, I'm talking to her, and in my mind I'm thinking, I want to fix this. How can I fix this? And I know in that moment there's nothing I can say and there's nothing I can do except to say, I'm sorry, and I will pray. But I want to do more. As I drove home and I asked God, I just said, God, help me. Help me. We don't deal well with grief, pain, loss, all these things. And when we revert to these platitudes, all it does is show our inability to just simply be with someone who is going through something. And as much as we may try to ignore it, I think the reality we all have to admit is, I got stuff, You got stuff. All God's children got stuff. Exactly. We have to move beyond the Pollyanna Christianity and realize this truth. Faith does not mean fake. Faith does not mean fake. I mean, just look at the Bible. Wouldn't it be much nicer if we got a whitewashed version of the Bible with all the difficulty and all the pain and all the hardship just taken out? It'd be much easier to believe, but I think what we find in the Bible with all the difficulty, trials, hardship, heartache, and pain, what we see is actually what I would call reasons to believe it. Because why would you put all this stuff in there if it wasn't true? I mean, you get down in the dirty details. You sometimes see the embarrassing and the confusing things of real people experiencing real life. I mean, you go to the book of Psalms and you find Psalm chapter 6, where you find David writing this. He says, "My soul is in deep anguish. How long, Lord? How long? Turn, Lord, and deliver me. Save me because of your unfailing love. Among the dead, no one proclaims your name. Who praises you from the grave? I am worn out from my groaning. All night long, I flood my bed with weeping and drench my couch with tears." Well, he just needs to know God's in control and he'd be all right, right? No. This is an individual, a man, who is going through an incredible, painful hardship. And in the Bible, it's been written down and preserved for thousands of years for us to see that maybe this is okay. Maybe this is okay to acknowledge in the depth of our pain that we can cry out to God and own that difficulty and pain. That's just one of the Psalms. You could go to any of the other Psalms of lament, like Psalm 130 or Psalm 10 or Psalm 38 or Psalm 42 and 43. But even then, as you take another step back and you look at the Bible, you know, that, as I said, David was the one who wrote that Psalm. But what about Naomi, who's also another Old Testament character? She lost her son. She'd lost her husband. She was in a hard place. And look at what she wrote. Look at what she said. She didn't write, but what she said. In Ruth chapter 1, she says this. She says, "Don't call me Naomi," she told the people she's talking to. She said, "Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune on me." Another very real, raw, honest moment of somebody dealing with stuff. And we could even jump to the New Testament and go to that moment after Jesus shared the final meal with his disciples, as he is praying in the Garden of Gethsemane. And he says to his disciples, he says, "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death." That's Jesus. That's what Jesus himself, the Son of God, said, the second person in the Trinity. "I am overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death." And he continued in Luke and said, "And being in anguish, he prayed more earnestly with sweat. Sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground." Can I just tell you something this morning? Faith is not fake. It is okay to be real. It is okay to own where you are and what you're going through. And maybe today you're sitting here and you think, "Yeah, Christmas kind of sucks this year. I got a diagnosis. I've heard something. Something happened to someone in my family. I've lost a family member. I've lost my job. The job isn't going like I thought. I don't have the money I thought I'd have. It's not going to be the presents I thought we'd get to buy." Whatever it may be, I want you to know that it's okay to own where you are. As I said, a core value for us at Ashworth is the value of authenticity, because we believe that being real is better and even more important than being religious. I love this statement. Do you know why? Because it gives room for us to admit our humanity, our struggles, our doubts, the things we wrestle with. It's okay to be there. We don't have to have it all figured out. And please, oh please, don't ever think that when you walk into these doors or walk into an Ashworth at Home group or a Sunday school class or wherever you may be in community with others, that it means, "Oh, things are good." No, really, it's great. That's not helpful to anyone. It's okay to be where you are. And I think what we also have to realize is that when we realize our struggles, our humanity, all these things, it's that this core value allows us to wrestle with these things together in community. It's a reminder that you don't have to face this alone, and you shouldn't face this alone. Community is so vital to being able to deal with and process the blueness of Christmas. Because you know what we find out when we begin to open up and share? And I get it, that first moment where you have to share vulnerability is very hard. It's very challenging because you've built up in your mind this lie that says, well, I'm the only one that is experiencing this, that has ever experienced this. I'm alone. I'm by myself. Nobody will understand. So I'm just going to sit in silence and by myself. And the moment we choose to open up and begin to share, you know what we find? Amazingly, we are not alone. Amazingly, there are others who have experienced or are experiencing exactly what we are talking about. They've had the same experiences. They've had the same emotions. And in that moment, we begin to take those first steps toward healing because we find out that we aren't alone. Now, you may think, well, what does this have to do with Advent? How does this tie in with Advent at all? Well, the important thing for us to understand, Baptists have typically, and non-denominational churches, evangelical churches, if you will, have always kind of skipped over Advent. We would call this season Christmas. Technically, in the church calendar, it's not. It is Advent. It's preparation, anticipation, which is what Amy talked about last week. Christmas season, Christmas time, actually begins on the 25th and goes forward from there. Why is that important? Why? Because I think for us, we've always wanted to jump to the joy. We want to jump to the good stuff. We want to jump to the opening of the presents. We want to jump to the birth of Jesus in that manger, and we want to put our nativities up and think all that. What we don't like to do is stop and think about what Advent really means and understand that really, when we drill down to Advent, Advent began in darkness. Advent, why do we have to prepare and hope? Because we are in darkness. When you begin to think about this, all these things that even the carols we sing, some of them actually get it right. They don't jump to the joy. And yes, there is joy with the birth. But when you come back and you talk to see hymns like O Come Emmanuel, and I went through our hymnal that we have just to see some of the carols and listen to some of the lyrics that are in there. They talk about needing to be set free. That's not uplifting. We needed to be released from sins. We are ransom captive that mourns in lowly exile. Disperse the gloomy clouds of night. Bid envy, strife, and quarrel cease. Dreamless sleep. That sounds depressing. Dark streets, the weary world, sad and lonely plains. Other carols are beneath life's crushing load. Toil along the climbing way with painful steps and slow. Or even no crib for a bed. That's depressing. That's sad. No crying he makes. Moms, if you had a newborn and they weren't crying, what are you thinking? What's wrong with that child? Exactly. That's not good. No more let sin and sorrow grow. But there's this idea that the world is overwhelmed. That we need the season of Advent to remember that it begins in this dark place. When you go back to the Old Testament, you begin to read some of the prophets, you understand what they were trying to prepare people for. They weren't talking about how amazing life was. The people were in exile. The dreams they had, the things that they had hoped for were shattered, laying on the ground. And the prophets come up. And Isaiah chapter 11, he says this. He says, a shoot will come from the stump of Jesse. And yeah, that's a positive thing. A shoot will come up. But what's it coming from? A stump. What's a stump mean? It's been cut down. Something horrible has happened to cut that down, that it needs that shoot to rise up from it. Or in Isaiah chapter 9, when Isaiah talks about the people walking in darkness. Yeah, you can go forward and you can say, oh, they've seen a great light. That's right. But the only way you get to see the great light is to be walking in the darkness. And that's what the prophets are trying to talk about. Or even Isaiah 40. Comfort, comfort my people, says your God. Speak tenderly to Jerusalem and proclaim to her that her hard service has been completed, that her sin has been paid for, and that she's received from the Lord's hand double for all her sins. Yes, it's good news that something is coming, that the time in exile is coming to an end, but it doesn't erase where you are now and what you've experienced and what you've gone through. They needed comfort. And maybe you here today need comfort. You see, healing isn't about ignoring reality or pretending it's different. The good news of Jesus begins and comes by recognizing our condition, our brokenness, our sin, our helplessness, and possibly our hopelessness. Even Jesus realized that. When he was hanging out with the dregs of society, everybody that had been cast off by the religious elites, and they look at Jesus and they say, why are you hanging out with these people? Why are you eating and drinking with sinners and tax collectors? And Jesus says, because it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I've not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance. You understand that there's no need for a savior if you've got it all together. Perfect people don't need Jesus. And if you sit here today, and if you think, I know I don't have it all together, my life is a wreck and it's a mess, then I want you to know that this message of Jesus, the good news, is for you. You're exactly who Jesus himself said he came for. And we need to realize that, and maybe for some of us, we just need to stop pretending that we do have it all together. But as Advent begins in darkness, with that blue Christmas, we think back to that first Christmas. It was very blue. It wasn't the most wonderful time of the year. In fact, as I was reading this week, I came across something somebody had written. And it said this. It said that Christmas is the story of a teenage girl pregnant with a child that's not her husband's. A child born in a dirty animal stall. Innocent boys being killed by King Herod because Herod feared one of them might be a rival king. It's the story of someone sent into the world in peace who was condemned to death. Of a light sent to shine in the darkness and the world snuffed it out. It is the story of God's never-ending self-giving mercy which was rejected and condemned. That's the story of Christmas. The first Christmas was a blue Christmas. And as bad as all that may sound, as difficult as it may be, it is still the story of God with us. Because Advent begins in darkness, but it begins with God among us. God entering our mess, taking on human flesh, becoming one of us to experience what we've experienced, the highs and the lows, the good and the bad. And what Advent should remind us of is, yes, there is darkness. But in that darkness, when we can't see, God can see. He can see beyond what we can and what will be. It's a reminder for us to think about, where are we putting our eyes? Where are we focusing our vision? Are we trusting in ourselves? Or are we allowing us to see possibly what God can see? See, I think sometimes we buy into the lie that life is only what we can see and experience. But there's a challenge to us that follow Jesus to say, will we trust in the goodness of God? The God who has continually pursued us, and he will allow us to see what he can see. This is the same God who turns enemies into friends, turns orphans into his children, brings light into the darkness, and takes what was dead and gives it life. We have to remember that the end of the Advent season, December 25th, is no longer darkness. It is God with us. And what I love about Advent, and I think sometimes we miss, is that it's also the reminder that God is not done yet. Yes, Advent points us to December 25th, the birth of Jesus, great. But as Christians on this side of that birth, it should also point us to another thing. God isn't done. Jesus is still coming again. And we can be part of what he's doing. Isn't that exciting? when we think about the brokenness of the world, when we think about the garbage that we sometimes have to sit in, we can be reminded in this Advent season that there is more to come, that Jesus is not done. The brokenness that we experience will be made whole, and Jesus is going to make all things new. We're actually going to pursue that whole idea of all things new in January. What does that mean? We're going to spend about a month talking about the different things that God will make new. So this morning, I just want to wrap up and just say, you know, if you're having a blue Christmas, you're in good company. That's okay. With many in the Bible, including the Jewish people in captivity, with Mary and Joseph, and the message of Advent isn't that you have to run away and try to ignore your brokenness. You don't have to put on a mask and pretend that everything is all right. Because Advent is the season to remind us the reality of our existence. But God is not done yet. The world is broken. Jesus entered our brokenness and mess, and he's not done yet. And then lastly, just remember, you are not alone. I hope that you'll take this season of Advent, whether you feel the joy or not, whether it's the red and green Christmas or the blue Christmas, and I hope that you will allow this season to turn you towards God, run towards him, and don't feel like you have to do it on your own. There's a really important piece that you keep hearing me talk about, community, community, community. You need others, and others need you. Don't fall into the trap of trying to exist on your own. Connect with others who can lift you up and pray for you, to give you faith when you feel like you have none, who will encourage you regardless of what you're experiencing and remind you that they are with you. Sit with people who can see things maybe that you can't see, people that will move beyond the platitudes and maybe just sit with you in your pain and your difficulty.